Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Table. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, I am joined today by Dave Hendrick, and Dave Hendrick alone, you may know from all of his Anfield Index work, and his Twitter is popping, I believe, is the saying.
I think that's what the kids say these days, Kev. I think it's lit.
Oh, your Twitter is indeed quite lit. We are going to stick to the new format somewhat. Dave, I know you haven't been on since we've changed things around. So up front, we talk about some of the stuff that's been happening, a little more topical, a little more newsy, instead of just like broad things. But something I wanted to talk about was not refereeing. It's already been a take that's been established, as there were a lot of cards. But I think the more interesting conversation is about the fact that we've seen a lot of late and hard challenges. And I was wondering why you think we're seeing more of that. Do you think it's a lack of match speed preparedness coming into the season, or are people just relying on strength instead of technique? I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on why this is going on.
I actually think it's just because preseason's a complete waste of time the way teams are using it at the minute. Teams are only using it for fitness. They're not actually using it for sharpness. They're not working on patterns of play and stuff like that. They're only using it for fitness. Like the Gary Cahill one is the prime example. Like, I know Chelsea've had a weird summer, and I'm not a big fan of Gary Cahill. I think he's hugely overrated, but he's never a guy that you expect to make a dangerous tackle like that.
Right.
That's just a lack of sharpness, and he's not sharp because Chelsea haven't been playing competitive games since May. And preseason games are never competitive games, but there are times when they do actually break into real matches. But now they just seem to be like, I don't know, it's just like they're using them just to get fit. And players aren't fully switched on. It's a weird one. It really is. I don't know, there was so many yesterday. Like, so many late, unnecessary fouls. So many silly things as well. Like, not just the late fouls, but loads of shirt grabbing. From guys miscontrolling a pass, the ball bounces off them, guy goes by them, pulled the shirt, and it's pure frustration. And again, it's because the touch isn't there in the first instance. So that's a rust thing as well. That's a lack of match sharpness. So I do think it comes down to match sharpness more than anything. Like, Gary Cahill's not pretending to be a tough guy. The same with Cesc Fabregas. Like, nobody's buying that Cesc is a tough guy. I think the Chelsea players let themselves down massively yesterday with their behaviour. Him being the worst example. I thought he was a disgrace. He could have been sent off earlier in the game.
Fabregas?
Yeah, for the way he was reacting to the referee, I thought he was trying to bully the referee at one point into booking a Burnley player after he'd already been booked himself. He could have been sent off for that. The tackle is just stupid. And then how he can even have the audacity to turn around and have a tantrum about it. You've been booked. You've just hacked your way through somebody. How are you not even... you should just walk off the field, really. Chelsea let themselves down badly yesterday. That's something Conte is going to have to address really, really soon.
To be fair, Burnley looked, if not better, at least very competitive, even before the red card.
They did.
Chelsea were not blowing them away.
Burnley were the better team from the minute the game started. Chelsea took over the game in the last, 15 or so.
As soon as they went down to 9 men.
Down to 9 men. Burnley were like, 3-0 up, these guys have 9 men. We're sitting back here. there's no point in any of us getting injured. Let's sit back. Let's contain. Chelsea get two goals back in. They obviously had another goal disallowed, which if I was Andreas Christensen, I would have punched Alvaro Morata so hard in the throat after that game. Because that's a perfectly good goal if Morata doesn't try and be greedy and steal it. So just, Chelsea should have cut a point, but Morata did what Nani did to Cristiano Ronaldo many years ago. And Ronaldo had that unbelievable bit of skill, chipped the keeper, and Nani comes in from an offside position and gets the final touch. Morata does the same to Christensen. But I think it is. I think pre-season, it's become more about fitness. It's become more about running, being able to run long runs, and not so much about what it used to be about, which was match practice, match sharpness, you know, working on your technique and your patterns of play. Maybe that's just the new era of managers, though. I think tactics are less prevalent in the game today than they were, say, 15 years ago.
Which is interesting, because going into last season, and most of them are still here, the whole argument was like, all of these great managers are finally in the Premier League. So you would have expected that to boost, if anything.
Yeah, but I don't think they're great tacticians. I think Mourinho's got one, maybe two real tactical plans, and they're very basic. One is we park the bus, and the other is we park two buses. Conte, I think, is a decent tactician, but his ability lies in his organisation, his preparation, his motivation. That's where he's great. Klopp is a man manager. He's a great motivator. But again, I'm not sure he's a fantastic tactician. I think Pep is a good tactician, but I also think he's a little bit of a dreamer and he wants footballing perfection. And maybe he doesn't have a pragmatic side that will enable his teams to just dog out results. I think the best tactician in the league is the youngest of the group, Pochettino. And I think we're only seeing that beginning to evolve with him now, where Spurs have two, three, four different ways they can set up and play. But Poch is a half decade younger than any of these. He's 10 years younger than some of them.
Yeah.
So for me, like, if I was looking at those guys and thinking, well, who would I want for the long term? I'd want Poch. In the short term, I'd want Klopp or Conte, because Mourinho's too boring for me. And I love Pep. I think Pep is a genius, but I think maybe he's too much of a genius. I think he's always going to be chasing that perfection. But if I was looking for a long term, if I couldn't get Diego Simeone, it'd be Poch that I'd want.
Yeah, a lot of good Argentinian managers knocking around at the moment. Also, great seeing Bielsa actually take a job and then be there for week one.
Yeah, it's fantastic actually managing a football match again.
Yeah.
Who knew that was part of being a manager, actually signing a contract and following through till the first game?
Yeah.
Tremendous.
It's crazy. But yeah, definitely worth keeping an eye on. Ligue 1, a lot of interesting storylines in there. For a couple years, it was kind of not as interesting, but with what's going on with Nice and all their reclamation projects, Monaco and who they have left is still interesting. PSG now have Neymar. Now you have Bielsa back in there. It should be an interesting league to follow this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Who were you most impressed by this week? Obviously, Burnley against Chelsea was the big one. The first time a title holder has conceded three goals and lost in the first match. But also Huddersfield coming up. Jake mentioned last week that a lot of people were sleeping on Huddersfield and that's the quickest way to lose. Is with their, speaking of tactics, with David Wagner there, that he does a very good job of undoing teams that are set up in a way that is strictly to attack them, that they don't expect much resistance from Huddersfield, and that they do offer that. Crystal Palace, unfortunately, on the downside of that. But either club or player or both, who were you most impressed by this week?
I think team-wise, I think Huddersfield, I think it's very impressive to come up and perform the way they did yesterday, especially against a fairly decent team in Palace who've got a good new manager. I think Palace need to spend. I think if ever there was emphasis that they need to go and just pony up the cash from Amadou Sakho, I think it's yesterday. Scott Dan just looked like he'd never seen a football pitch before. So I think Palace have work to do. But yeah, so I was impressed by Huddersfield. Very impressed by Sam Vokes yesterday for Burnley. Thought he really held the line really well, worked his channels, brought his teammates into the play. And he, again, what really impressed me with a striker up against the back three is having the ability to play against all three of them and been able to cause all three problems. And that's exactly what he did yesterday. He was able to cause all three members of that back three problems. He was able to pull and drag them out of position, bring his teammates into play, got himself two goals, had another goal disallowed as well. So I think all in all, you have to be really impressed. I was impressed with your lads today. I thought John Joe Shelby showed why he's not fit to be a captain. And that kind of gave you guys the boost you needed, because it was a little bit of a...
It was plodding.
A bit of a plodding performance. But that's what I love about Spurs, is you guys can play poorly and still win. You guys are pretty poor for about 60 minutes today. And then you turn it on. And that's the sign of a really good team.
And the best thing about the way we play poorly is we were never really under threat.
No. Well, that's the thing. You can play poorly, and if you play poorly, worst case scenario is you're going to get a 0-0. Because you just don't concede goals.
Is important.
Especially when you look at the fact that yesterday you're missing your first-choice defensive midfielder sitting on the bench, and both your first-choice fullbacks are out. One is gone. His replacement is out in Trippier. Yep. You've got a kid playing right back. You've got Ben Davis.
Son of Lamella equals Sissoko.
Yeah, do you know? Like, Sissoko seems to have just decided he needs to play real football this year. Now, I thought he was fairly terrible today. Maybe Poch was just giving him a chance to go back and prove Newcastle fans wrong, but I think he compounded their views on him, if anything. But I mean, I love the way Spurs play. I love the fact that you guys can play badly and you're not going to lose because you just don't concede goals. You've got the best defence in the league, and from reports, you're on the verge of signing
Davinson
Sanchez, who is an absolute monster, potentially one of the five or six best defenders in the world in 2 to 3
eventually,
years.
Eventually, right?
In 2 to 3 years, yeah.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, if he comes in now, he's starting now. Like, you're going back three.
You think that forces us back three?
Oh, I think it has to. You can't leave. If you've got him, Toby, and Vertonghen, you can't leave any of them on the bench. I think what it might be is you go back three now, and if Toby won't sign a new contract, he gets sold next summer. And maybe Vertonghen does as well because of his age. But you're starting that process of replacing them. But you have to. You go Sanchez on the right, Toby in the middle, Vertonghen on the left. You've been linked with Cancelo, the Portuguese right back, as well. He comes in, perfect wing back. Who knows what happens with Danny Rose? There's been talk that United would like Danny Rose. Look, if you guys got Luke Shaw and some cash, Shaw's a better player than Danny Rose.
Is really funny is I think, and somebody mentioned this to me on Twitter yesterday, and I thought it made a lot of sense, that our Martial bid was retaliation for their Rose bid.
Yeah. But if you guys really want to stand your ground and say, we are not giving you Rose unless you give us Martial.
Yeah. Actually, this is a really interesting entry point into a question I have for you about Liverpool, which is, for us, I thought he was gone after I first saw that. And then I was very surprised that the next day, Mauricio Pochettino said he apologized to everybody, and the apology was made public like 20 minutes before the press conference started. But he said that he had apologized to everybody, and I thought there was a really interesting tidbit that I would not have thought of myself. And in that press conference, Mauricio Pochettino referenced the fact that he has been a player that was hurt, and that you can really get inside your head and go a lot of weird places mentally during that stretch being removed from the pitch. And so basically it was like, hey, don't say that.
But also, you know, there's other factors here, Kev. Like, he's been your starting left back now for, what, 3-4 years?
Since Benny left.
And on the opposite flank, Kyle Walker's been the starting right back for about the same length of time. About, you know, so He's just seeing Kyle Walker.
Walker just had the one more year because of the Rose loan to Sunderland.
To Sunderland, that's right. But he's just seeing Kyle Walker get a move to Manchester City that is has doubled, if not trebled, his wages.
Yep, and is closer to home, which is a big thing for both of them.
Exactly, they're both Northern lads. So, but he's probably looking at that and thinking, he's not a better player than me. Now he's on double or treble the money. He's probably looking around the dressing room as well. And like you say, because he's not playing, he's got all this extra time to think about these things. And he's probably looking at Sissoko and thinking, how are they paying you 100 grand a week?
Yeah.
You're awful. And he's probably looking at Eric Dier and thinking, you're not even one of our 11 best players. How are you getting more money than me?
Mm.
And he's probably gone through every single one of them. And he might look at Toby and go, yeah, okay. And and right. Toby, I think, earns a little bit less than Rose. Probably looks at Vertonghen and thinks, well, you used to be captain. You're probably a better player than me. That's fair enough. Looks at Hugo Lloris, same thing. Looks at Wanyama, same thing. But he's probably looking at a couple of these guys and thinking, how on earth are these people earning more money than me?
Yeah.
I'm England's best left back.
Sissoko's on 30% more.
Yeah. But he's England's best... He's England's best left back, but let's put that in context. England don't have a very good left back. They don't have a very good right back. Walker's just a good player. He's not a great player.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way that Kane is the best forward. You can argue that others Kane's may or may not be more talented,
Daniel
but he
Sturridge.
Stays on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Kane's the best forward because Daniel Sturridge is injured.
Always.
Daniel Sturridge is the most talented. Kane is the best because the greatest ability...
That's a very fine distinction.
Yeah, because the greatest ability you can have is availability. And if you can't be on the pitch, you can't claim to be great. Harry Kane, I know he's had a couple of injuries the last couple of seasons with the ankle and whatever, but he is out there playing 30 games in the league a season, 40, 45 overall. Harry Kane has earned the slot as England's number one striker.
As Rose has.
As Dele Alli has. These guys have earned their place, and they deserve to be paid as such. Spurs are very clever, and they've really done well to put this team together. And I know the reason they've done it. They've brought the wage bill down from where it was when Redknapp was there, obviously, and you're just throwing money around like it was going out of fashion. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, I used to hear, 10 years before that, Spurs fans complaining about, oh, Arsenal, and they spend too much money, and they pay all these players off. When Saul Campbell went, for example, they pay him all this money. And then, like, the hypocrisy of it, because, like, you get the Champions League under Redknapp, and next thing it's raining tenors, like, money for everybody.
Yeah, Van der Vaart, Modric.
Yeah, you know.
Bale bringing in Adebayor.
Yeah, and it's just not sustainable for a club like Spurs when you're trying to build a new stadium and not, completely hamstring the financial future of the club.
Right.
So they've done this, like, Daniel Levy is very, very clever, and obviously he's got great support from your owner. So he's brought the wage bill down, he's set in place this structure, and look, every player who's there signed up for that.
And that was another great point made by Pochettino, was he signed a contract 11 months ago.
Yeah.
And nobody forced him to do it. He doubled his wages then.
Exactly.
From 30 up to 60.
And that's the thing. And a couple of years ago, he was playing at Sunderland, getting himself torn apart week after week after week by the likes of Raheem Sterling or any decent winger. Just went to Sunderland and tore him apart. He went back to Spurs. He wasn't particularly good in his first year. Then Pochettino got his hands on him. And it's the same with Kyle Walker. Before Pochettino, Kyle Walker was largely seen as rubbish.
He was just pace.
That's all he was. And let's be fair, for the most part, that's still what he has. But he's learned how to harness that.
He has two things that I think set him apart right now, which is, weirdly, his high touches. Like when a cross comes in, he can take it at like chest height with his foot and control it. And the other one is the way he curls in front of attackers when people try to play long balls to them. Because he used to just sit back and then use his recovery speed.
Exactly.
But he's starting to cut off a lot of those passes.
See, Rose is quick. Walker's powerful.
Yeah.
And Pochettino's taught Walker how to use his frame and how to use his muscles and his power.
Yeah, they don't make wingbacks as big and fast as Walker.
Kyle Walker's like a running back. You know what I mean? Kyle Walker is the build of a centre-back or centre-mid or box-to-box midfielder. You don't find many full-backs as big as that guy. Now, City are going to have two in him and Mendy, so that'll be interesting. But my point is, Danny Rose needs to look at the bigger picture. If it wasn't for Pochettino, he probably wouldn't be at Spurs anymore.
Yeah, and he came out and said he didn't want people to think that he only got good under Pochettino, which he basically did.
He did.
But I think that's the not on the pitch thing. I think that's too many people close to you.
Yeah.
Upping you.
People are saying you're a system. That's why his mates are sitting around and going, you know what? I'm reading on Twitter here. This guy says you're only good in a system. You're good in Pochettino's system. You'd be nothing without it. They're saying the same because people are saying the same about Walker.
True.
And I think Walker's going to get found out a little bit because I don't think Guardiola is any good defensively at all.
I think he will be fine as long as company is fit.
So for about 3 games a season.
Right. Because also not just Pochettino, but Walker got a lot better the year Toby showed up.
Of course, and then he got even better when Wanyama showed up.
Yeah.
But Toby plays almost every game. Wanyama plays almost every game. Vincent Kompany plays 10 games a season. Vincent Kompany's old now, and he's got major... Like, if you look at the injuries, Wanyama misses games. He broke his leg a few years ago. He misses games from impact injuries. The same with Toby last season. Wanyama's missing games from muscular injuries.
Kompany,
Kompany's missing games from muscular injuries. Very different.
Yeah, muscles and tendons, all the stuff.
Yeah, you know, you're going to lose... That's something you're not going to just overcome.
Yeah.
So I think Rose is an interesting one. I think... If you could get 20 million and Luke Shaw out of the deal, I'd jump at it.
Yeah.
And you just turn that 20 million into the Portuguese right back, Cancelo.
Cancelo.
All of a sudden, like this season, they're not going to be as good as Walker and Rose would have been for you.
True.
But all of a sudden, next season, you've got better wing backs or full backs than what you had. And you've also got 50 million in the bank from what you got for Walker.
Yeah.
So, you know, then the same thing happens. You get Davinson Sanchez in this year. Say he costs 35 million or 30 million. Maybe next summer you do have to sell Toby. And that's fine because Sanchez just replaces
him. Which, by the way, I think only happens if we miss Champions League.
Yes. The only thing is, with Alderweireld, because he's now pushing his late 20s, he might be looking at it and going, I need to get one massive payday.
And he could, if Belgium do anything at the World Cup.
Well, put it this way, right? If Liverpool get Van Dijk this summer, they're going to want another centre-back next summer. They're going to be paying Van Dijk about 180 grand a week.
Mm.
If they went to Toby's agent and says, look, if he wants to come to Liverpool, we'll give him a 4-year contract, 180 grand a week. He'll play next to Virgil van Dijk. Would he be interested? You fucking better believe he'd be interested. He's on, what, 75 grand a week now? Less than 4 million a year. So he's not turning down 9 million a year, which is what we'd be offering, which is what we're offering Van Dijk. And he is someone we looked at for this summer, but it just wasn't a feasible deal. Largely because Daniel Levy's a pain in the arse, and, you know. But next summer...
He's like a deterrent when it comes to negotiation.
But next summer it is going to be a feasible deal because he's only going to have 1 year left in his contract.
Mm.
And you're not going to be a club that will turn down 60 million for a guy... who's 29, 1 year left in his contract.
Well, let's see where the market goes, but you would assume so. We got way off onto Tottenham there. My original point about Rose was that I thought he was leaving, but then Pochettino forgave him, and so now he's probably staying. A somewhat similar, larger scale issue currently at Liverpool with all of this Coutinho stuff.
Mm.
Is there a way back in for him? If he does stay, do you think he isn't going to... Where does the situation fall for you? And if he does end up staying and coming back into the team, how long do you think it would take for people to buy back into his presence?
Oh, I think they will. I think the players would fairly quickly because the players are his friends. The players understand what his situation is. Look, my understanding, having spoken to a number of people connected to the club, is the following. Phil Coutinho informed us in February that he would like to join Barcelona this summer. We were open to that possibility because we knew it was coming. Klopp kind of tried to work on him for a couple of months, but we were planning for him to go in the summer. In early May, it became clear Barcelona didn't have the money to buy him this summer. And Klopp and him had a conversation, and he agreed to stay one more year. But that, to me, was on the basis that Barcelona didn't have the money to buy him. Because at the time, nobody thought this Neymar thing was going to happen. Like, this Neymar thing wasn't even been mentioned. Then all of a sudden, the Neymar thing starts. Then Barca have whatever amount of money they have left after taxes. And they, I believe they're buying Paulinho for 35 million.
Which is can't even.
What is I'm very confused by how that's like. All I can think of is that like they owe his agent a massive favor.
Is this Barca's baby?
It must be. Like, there's no other explanation. And I like the guy. I he's a much better player than he showed at Spurs. But
or their scouting department has literally only seen him play for Brazil.
Possibly.
I want that Paulinho.
Yeah, that Paulinho is very, very good. But so it just depends. And like all they have to spend is that Neymar money after tax, after paying the bank a percentage, because they're so much in debt that the bank could just swallow that money and say, "Well, tough, you owe us 600 million. We're just taking this." They've probably got about 140 million pounds left after everything now. So that's what they have to spend. That's pretty much our price. But they're back in for him. He wants to go. A week ago, he told Klopp, "I want to go." Klopp said no. There was a bit of an argument. Klopp stormed out of training and went home. Klopp refused to even consider it. Fenway Sports Group, the simpletons that they are, decided, right, Jurgen doesn't want to sell him. Here we come. Super FSG to the rescue. Start launching out statements. "We will not sell under any circumstance. We consider this matter closed." Blah, 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 blah. To which Coutinho's people respond by leaking stories that they had a falling out, by leaking the by putting in the transfer request, and then leaking.
It was submitted, then wasn't submitted. Then
well,
was
see, this
submitted.
Is the thing. It was submitted the day before. It broke on the Friday. It was submitted on the Thursday. FSG.
Is that the email that we heard about, or was
yeah,
that
went in on the Thursday. It didn't go in on the Friday morning. The statement was in response to that. The statement wouldn't have come out otherwise. But we weren't going to make it known that he'd requested a transfer. We weren't going to make it known that he was refusing to train, which he is. He's refusing to train. We were saying he's got a back injury and there was no transfer request. James Pearce, Melissa Reddy, a couple of others were briefed. No transfer request. No transfer request. Fine. Next thing, his side leaks out. Oh, no, there was a transfer request. And it becomes a circus. Then I don't know, some fourth cousin that he met at a wedding once is on Brazilian TV telling people, "Oh, the relationship's broken down."
And
blah,
with
blah,
direct
blah.
Quotes referring directly to his surname, which I thought was strange.
Yeah, you know, like this is some guy, this is someone that doesn't know him. So that's all horseshit. But Klopp has taken this personally. And I think at this point, what I'm hearing is Klopp wants to sell. He wants
just
to sell.
Doesn't want that situation sticking around.
Yeah, and he wants to sell now because he's lost trust in Coutinho. And when Klopp loses trust in somebody, he doesn't really allow them to earn it back. We see what happens with Sacco.
Yeah.
So he wants Coutinho gone. The owners would sell at a price but aren't really willing to go back because they've just made a statement saying we're not selling at any price. They look foolish. They look weak. And because Liverpool fans are kind of strange, they'll just blame them regardless of who's idea it was to sell, and I don't understand why there has to be blame. Player wants to go, club are offering us. If they offer us £130 million for Phil Coutinho, I'm sorry, you have to accept that. You have to.
And what do you feel any obligation to a player that's been at the club for as long as he has?
Don't feel any
not
obligation
standing in
to
his
anybody.
Way of the move.
In terms of no, I look.
If I'm not saying you should. The
only thing that makes it difficult for me is the timing. Like, we're in mid-August.
Like, the season has literally started.
Yeah, if this all kicked off in June, I would have been like, fine, happy days, sell them, best of luck, Phil, away with you, you know, take care, I hope you win stuff in Barca. I was happy for Suarez to go. I knew Suarez. Everyone knew Suarez was leaving. We knew from the previous summer that Suarez was leaving that summer. And he gave us an incredible season. Arguably the best season any player has ever had in the Premier League. He was ridiculous, as your lot found out. 5-0.
Even Flanagan.
Even Flanagan has scored. So I was happy for Suarez to leave. I would have been happy if Coutinho left in June, because I was expecting him to leave, because I'd heard in March that he was leaving. He was giving up the lease in his house. He was, you know, pulling his daughter out of school and all this kind of stuff. So that's all fine. Or at preschool or whatever it was she was in. That's all fine. Then it turns out that no, Barca have no money. So he's staying, goes through pre-season. We're all getting excited because we've got Salah, Firmino and Mane up front. Now Coutinho's in midfield. He's going to play with Emre Can. We could get Naby Keita. All of a sudden, we've got the best front six in the league, potentially. And now the Keita deal is stalled, and now Coutinho wants to leave. But it's just not looking good. But I don't think you can blame him for wanting the move. And if they're willing to pay well above what his actual value is, because the market's so inflated because of the Neymar thing, and we know they have that money, if we stand firm and say 130 million, no installments, no add-ons, one lump sum cash on the table right now, I wave them goodbye, take that money and go and attack clubs that have players with buyout clauses. Torino have Belotti, Inter have Icardi, Real have Kovacic, Atletico have Jose Jimenez, the central defender. Go and get yourself one of those strikers and Jimenez, or Kovacic and Jimenez. You know, either replace Phil directly with Kovacic, bring in Jimenez to partner Van Dijk when he comes, or go and get a number 9, because that's what you were planning to do originally.
Yeah.
But if he stays, he stays. Like, if he stays, he's going to play. Klopp's not going to make him sit on the bench. Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing, though, because as you mentioned, it did happen with Saka. And as if we needed another comparison between Tottenham and Liverpool, Poch very much the same way, which is why I thought it was going to go that way. Is we saw it with Bentaleb, we saw it with Ade, we saw it with Kapu, we saw it with Benny. Like, once you burn him, you're gone.
I wonder if Rose initiated the contact afterwards, though, to apologize.
Well, just as a person that, you know, is at times in journalism, I don't like claiming to be a journalist because I don't have a journalism degree, and I think it's important to differentiate between writers and journalists.
Agreed.
But as somebody that is in that industry, I do not know this for a fact, but this interview could have been done in June and held by the Sun until they thought it had maximum impact.
Very much so. Very, very much so. This interview might not even have been done with the Sun. This interview might
have
been
bought up.
This interview might have been done somewhere else, yeah. and they decided not to run it, and the Sun got their grubby little paws on it somewhere. But I mean, that was embargoed going into that night. Like, that, there was rumors that there was something going on like the day before.
Yeah.
And there was rumors that it was actually about Coutinho, because TalkSport.
Well, yeah, everybody was trying
something
to guess who it was for a good like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, and there was rumors it was about Coutinho or Van Dijk.
Or I even heard Alexis.
Yeah.
If you don't count the FA Cups, he wants to win real trophies. He's frustrated with Chelsea winning them across town, stuff like that.
Of course, he's going to leave. Like, Arsenal fans.
Do you think he leaves this window?
Arsenal fans are fooling themselves. They're not good. They're not turning down 70 or 80 million for a guy to sit there and sulk for the year.
Yeah. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I just can't believe how many of these huge pieces are still to be decided.
I know, it's crazy.
And you look at Everton, and they are caught in the least enviable position, because if they buy Sigurdsson now, they pay less for him from Swansea because they still have Barkley. But then we can offer less for Barkley because now they have Sigurdsson. But if they sell Barkley first, then Swansea are going to ask more for Sigurdsson. So they're just like in this awkward situation where it's a lose-lose for them.
And either way, they're ending up with the worst player because Barkley's better than Sigurdsson. And it's not close. Barkley is substantially better than Gylfi Sigurdsson.
He's definitely more rounded.
Gylfi's good at set pieces. He's a good passer.
He's a better creator for though Barkley's creation was much better last season and deeper.
Like Barkley, let's not forget, Barkley has the same number of goals and assists over the last 2 years as Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Mm.
So, and Barkley doesn't take set pieces. So he's doing that from open play. So in terms of open play creativity, I'd take Barkley because have you ever seen Gylfi Sigurdsson beat two players and split a defense and pass? Never. Like Barkley does that on the regular.
Also, we've only ever seen him play well in situations where he is constantly on the ball.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to happen at Everton because they've just signed Davy Klaassen. I don't see how him and Davy Klaassen even works together.
Yeah, especially if they're... Well, it depends on if they're trying to do three at the back, but if they're trying to do a 4-3-3, which I think suits their personnel the best, are you really going to play just Schneiderlin or just address a guy who still somehow doesn't get the love he needs?
I hope so.
Siggy and Klaassen in front of them?
I really hope so. I hope that's what they do because they'll get overrun by everybody.
Yeah.
I tell you one thing. When I saw the back three, yes, I just started laughing.
Yeah.
Like, I like Keane. I think he's good. But the idea of Jagielka and Williams playing as the flanking defenders in a three is just hilarious. Yep. Let them try that against Liverpool and see what Mane and Salah do to them.
That is not a good idea.
So, but you know, Sigurdsson's a weird one. I'm surprised it's still ongoing. Barkley's a weird one. Oxlade-Chamberlain, you mentioned Sanchez. The Ozil thing still hasn't been resolved either. Arsenal have a lot going on.
I do think Ozil stays.
So I think he will, but I think that's more because he doesn't have any other option. I think if another club had come in with a real bid, he would have been gone. You guys have obviously the Barkley thing from the other side, plus the Rose thing now.
Yeah, plus and all the names are starting to come in for us.
You haven't actually signed anyone yet.
With Pape from Celta Vigo.
Which random right-footed pacey left winger will you sign this summer?
Originally from an African nation.
Yeah, so you can sell him next summer.
How about Intep?
Could be his turn.
Why not?
Could be his turn.
They also have to start with an N. Ngoundou.
That's right. It's funny.
Eventually sell them back to France where they do well again.
Yeah.
Because Ngoundou does
And probably make a profit because it's Daniel Levy. look, if you guys get Cancelo and Davinson and keep everybody and then say add Barkley on deadline day, that's a really good window.
That is so much money for us, though. I think it's two of the three.
Is it, though? Because Barkley's the only...
In theory, no.
But Barkley's the only outlay. Barkley's the only outlay because the other money is coming from Walker.
Yeah.
You sold Walker for 50 million.
Well, we are plus 70 because we also got the Bentaleb money this window.
True. So you're up 70 million. Cancelo's going to cost 20 million. Fozzi, I think you got 5 million for him. So say 75. So he's 20 million. Davinson's 30, so there's 50. If you get Barkley for 35 million, you've got a 10 million net spend. You could, and there's still a possibility you sell Moussa Sissoko if you can find someone stupid enough. I honestly think you should start calling Everton and start pushing that Sissoko for Barkley swap because Ronald Koeman loves him some Moussa Sissoko.
He does. I think the fact that it looks like Bolasie will be back by December negates that, though.
Possibly. We could play him on the left.
You could.
Moose on the right. But, that's a if that happens, that is a great window for you. If you got those three guys in, that is a great window for you.
Yeah, although Danny Rose may have to Google them. That's all I'm going to say about that. Sure. I want to ask you one more Liverpool intensive question before we get to a version of Player Watch, which is you mentioned at the top of the show that you like Klopp, that you love having him short term. Also mentioned one of the downsides is that if he's scorned, it's basically over with players.
Mm.
The big question that a lot of neutrals are asking right now is, why has nothing happened in defense? Do you just blame personnel that not enough people have been brought in? Do you think there is some responsibility at Klopp's feet for not finding a way to make the pieces he has work yet? Where do you land on how the defense has been the main issue during basically his entire tenure?
His tenure, Rodgers' tenure. It's down to the manager and it's down to the players. The manager's not doing enough The first thing you should do is just take them all, fire them from cannons into the sea, and then go and buy new defenders. Because, listen, Dejan Lovren is as bad a centre-back as there is in the league. Joel Matip is okay, but he's too passive. Mignolet is like a scared little schoolgirl, won't open his mouth. Like, he got bullied for two of the goals yesterday. But he should be screaming at his defenders to get those... Like, Mignolet got bullied for their first goal and their third goal. He should be screaming at his defenders to get those attackers away from him. Lovren got bullied for the whole 90. I mean, Akaku had him on toast, and then Gray came on and pushed him around the place. So, you know... And then you've got Jordan Henderson, like, embarrassing himself in the holding midfield role. At fault for the first goal and the second... Partly at fault for the first goal, because it was his mistake that led to the break that led to the first goal. Completely at fault for the second goal, because he doesn't track the runner. So, and that's the issues we've always had. Reina fell apart in about 2010. We haven't had a good goalkeeper since. Since 2010, we've either had Skrtel or Lovren, at times both, as centre-backs. We've always had one dodgy full-back. It was Glenn Johnson for a long time, then it was Jose Enrique, then it was John Flanagan and Glenn Johnson. Last year it was Jimmy Milner. But the holding midfield role is so important as well. Like, you've seen the difference Wanyama made to your team. Now, Wanyama replaced Eric Dier, who was England's first choice in that position, and showed what a really good holding midfielder does. We had, for 10 years, Didi Hamann, Momo Sissoko, or Mascherano. Legitimate, top-class players in that role. For the last 7-8 years, we have had Lucas Leiva, hopeless, Steven Gerrard, abysmal defensively, and Jordan Henderson, lost in that
and
role.
And just not a defensive midfielder.
Just not a defensive... None of them are defensive midfielders. Never, ever, none of them were defensive midfielders. They got shanghaied into that role, and all they do is they charge at a position like idiots. They open the door, let everybody charge in at our defence. They're just useless. They're useless at the defensive side of that role. At least with Gerrard, you got something going forward. Henderson's not even offering that. He doesn't look fit. So that's where it starts. It starts with the midfield. Henderson doesn't protect the defence. It continues with the fact that our centre-backs, one's passive, the other's an idiot. And our goalkeeper just doesn't open his mouth and won't leave his line. So we have a lot of work to do. Now, this is where Klopp comes in. He needs to be the one to replace these guys. And he needs to replace them now. Like, if Southampton are still dragging the feet, go and offer 75 million. And let's see how big their balls are then. Let's see them turn down 75 million cash on the table. Let's see that. Then I'll believe the nonsense that he's not for sale. Of course he's for sale. Every player you have is for sale at the right price. That's who you are as a club. It's who you've always been.
Do you think you should have invested more time in a potential secondary option?
We have secondary options. Anyone that says otherwise... We have Van Dijk agreed. Right? We have Van Dijk agreed. They're dragging their feet. I'm with them. They're dragging their feet because you won't sell them Kevin Vimmer. You need to get Davinson Sanchez in to sell Kevin Vimmer to them. So once you get Sanchez, they get Vimmer, we get Van Dijk. That's how this is going to play out.
Yeah. But, and it could be a loan from us. Which
it could. That's fine. Whatever it is. Yeah. Just hurry up and make that happen so we can get our guy. Van Dijk comes in, he fixes a lot of the problems. But
does he become captain for you?
Oh, yeah. Without question, he's been promised. He's been promised the armband. That's one of the promises he was made. Maybe not straight away, but by Christmas he's captain. Henderson's out the team. Henderson's going to be injured in a month anyway. Like, the guy, did you see him yesterday? He looks like he drank too much prune juice. Like, he's a 70-year-old man who drank too much prune juice and is rushing to get to a toilet. He's not a good enough player in that role. Emre Can should play that role. We look Naby Keita is still the main target for that midfield role, but we have alternatives. You don't look at your team and think, I need a 70 million centre back. Oh, I can't get him. Oh, no, well, I'm fine with what I have then. Like, there's not just one centre-back. We didn't just sit down and look at all the centre-backs and go, this guy's the only one better than Lovren. This guy's the only one better than Matt. Like, you know, we looked at and went, of all the centre-backs that are better, this is the best one. And we do have alternatives. Like, there's no question we have alternatives. We don't feel we need them, which is why they're not been leaked to the press. As you know, Kev, the reason journalists get names of players that clubs want is because the club tell them.
Yeah, it's from somewhere. That's a very important thing to know. If you're at home and have never thought about this, every story comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
It's usually either from the agent side or the club side.
Or the club side. And the agent won't release it if he thinks it's going to screw a deal either.
Yeah. True. Also, weirdly, on that note, I think that all of that Danny Rose stuff was sought out by him, which stings a little bit more than it could. A paper doesn't come to you and just like, hey, we're interested in having Danny Rose talk about how frustrated he is at Tottenham, because you don't know that. They probably sought him out to do that.
Exactly.
So is there any point where with your current center backs, I know you're very confident that this will not be your center back pairing for much longer.
Mm.
Is there any way that you can think of tactically or somehow that Klopp could protect this back line more with the players on offer? I know that in the past we've talked about how Chan is probably more of a box-to-box long-term, but maybe plug him there to shield. Is there any combination of the players you have now that can make this better in the short term?
Of what we currently own? You could try Joe Gomez with Matip, maybe. Or go to a back three of Gomez, Matip, and Clavin. That might be the best option. Is a back three of Gomez, Matip, and Clavin, and then Chan and Wijnaldum as a two in front of them. But again, like, it's not anything other than kind of mid-table level, you know? Emery's to need one of those players I want starting for. I love Ginny. I think Ginny's is a really good player.
Why is he so underrated for you?
I don't know. I think it's because people don't appreciate what he does. I think, like he was poor yesterday, but people always go on about how poor he is away from home, but he's not. He just does a lot of kind of
the off...
He just
doesn't score away from home.
Yeah, but he does a lot of off the ball.
He's not an attacking midfielder to begin with.
No, he's not for us anyway. He plays a deep role for us.
Yeah.
He babysits Jordan Henderson. But like yesterday, like, you know, you see people talk about all the touches. He hasn't had enough touches. That's not his game. That's not how he plays for us. That's not that role. His role is to play off the ball and, you know, to do things one touch, to do things quickly. A lot of his is just movement and opening things up. I don't know why people don't appreciate him. It's a funny one. Like, it really is a funny one.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your defense can work itself out, because the attack, with or without Phil Coutinho, is just insane, as we saw yesterday. And the fact that you can just churn out that pace so quickly is interesting. What did you think about Roberto Pereira in his brief stint before getting hurt again?
He didn't really do anything. He's a weird player. I've never been a big fan. I didn't like him in Italy.
Really?
No, I've never been a fan. He's one of those players that I always think is looking for an excuse to get off the pitch.
Mm.
I don't think he wants any responsibility. And, you know, yesterday was fairly innocuous. Now, I know he's just come back from a serious injury, so perhaps part of him going off yesterday was precaution.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I agree. Although we do typically tend to agree on player IDs and stuff. I've always thought pretty highly of Pereira and would have loved him at Tottenham. I do agree the mentality probably isn't where you want it, but I feel like the right manager could get that out. And Marco Silva could be that manager. It just, we'll see. But
it possibly, because
if he couldn't make it work at Juve,
yeah, that's
how is he
going to
make it work at Watford?
But again, like, Silva maybe is just the right type of personality that will work with him.
Mm.
Like, Allegri tends to rub people the wrong way.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw that with Benucci. Maybe that's why. Maybe Silva is. Because Silva's I think Silva's a really good manager. I think they're going to be good this year. I think they're a solid mid-table team this year, Watford. I have no concerns with them being in a relegation battle.
And the Gray deal was really sneaky. Chalobah was a good deal. Richarlison, they basically took, and you know what? Bigger clubs may consider this in future. They filled their three biggest needs before the season started.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah, I think that, like, I'm not a big Gray fan. I think they've paid a lot of money for a guy that doesn't score many goals.
He score more goals than Agallo did?
Yeah, that won't be hard, you know. Like, right. But he fits their system. He's similar to Deeney,
and he will
and
pair
Agallo.
Well with Deeney.
Yeah, you know. So he'll fit what they want to do.
And Richarlison is high upside the same way Niang was last year for them.
Exactly. And
who, by the way, I'm stunned has not turned into anything. I was so high on him.
It's a weird one. I just don't think he has the right attitude. Yeah. But this kid looks like he does. You see him
pairing. Sorry, Chalobah probably pairing with Capoue is a.
Hopefully.
That's a good pairing.
That's a pairing that will cause a lot of teams a lot of problems. Nobody is going to play Watford this year and have an easy game in midfield. Let's just put it that
like
way.
Easy or fun points.
You're going to know that you've had a game.
Yeah. All right, now into this week's iteration of Player Watch, where we're going to talk about who the man of the match was. Was there an official one for Liverpool? And if so, do you agree with that choice?
It doesn't appear that there was. I haven't been able to find any information to tell
really?
Me.
Really? They just didn't bother.
But every outlet seems to have somebody else. So I've seen Firmino, I've seen Mane, I've seen Salah. Personally, I would have given it to Firmino. Goal and an assist, and I just thought he was really influential in that second half. Won a lot of ball back as well. I think his movement helped Mane and Salah. So for me, Firmino would have been man of the match. I think he's going to be a huge player for us this year. He's taken over the penalty duties, which, with a bit of luck, will get him towards that 20-goal mark that everybody talks about as what strikers need to produce. So I think he's going to be huge this season. No defender likes playing against him because he's just an absolute nightmare. But, you know, you see his movement, the touch and the lob for Salah's goal, the little ball around the corner to Salah, which won the penalty that he then slotted into the corner. He's basically, like, if Luis Suarez was a really nice guy who, instead of, you know, enjoying biting and tormenting people, enjoyed month-long sessions with your friends... Of just getting blind drunk. That's what Bobby Firmino is, the party version of Luis Suarez. You know, just in terms of the work rate, the creativity, the unselfishness, not as good a finisher, but not a bad finisher. And I think this year he's going to prove himself to be a really, really top player.
Yeah. For Tottenham, it officially went to Kyle Walker-Peters, who did play well on his debut. But I think for any Americans out there that are baseball fans, you don't have to be an American to like baseball, I suppose. But a lot of baseball highlights you see are outfielders making diving catches because they started their run the wrong direction when the ball hit the air. And that's kind of what Kyle Walker-Peters' performance was like today. He was beaten by Atsu multiple times, but then recovered well.
Sorry, Kev. What is his name?
Kyle Walker-Peters.
Kyle Walker Peters.
Yep. Had a tweet kind of bang today that was there's only one Kyle Walker Peters. One Kyle Walker Peters.
That is that's actually hilarious. I didn't realize that was his first name.
Yep.
That is funny.
Yeah, it's a good time. A great one that was like a Pokemon thing. It's like your Kyle Walker is evolving. It turned into Kyle Walker Peters.
Yep. You know, it's maybe that's why Kyle Walker left. Maybe he was scared of this guy.
They already have another one. It reminds me of I really wish I remember his name. I'm sure everybody has seen pictures. There was a player in our youth academy that looked almost exactly like Gareth Bale in his like last year. Kenneth McAvoy. Kenny McAvoy? One of those. But anyway, Walker Peters did do very well on his debut. But like I said, Atsu had the better of him a lot, and then it was his recovering that looked impressive, as opposed to, and I can't believe I'm saying this, as opposed to Ben Davis' side, where just nothing happened. And I think a lot of times that's more indicative of how well a defender has played. is if there's just no action around them.
For certain. I thought Ben Davis had a good game today. And normally he's the one scrambling to try and catch up with people. But, very easy day for Jan Vertonghen as well.
It was. Very, very resolute at the back end. They only had one shot on target in the first half. So not exactly troubled. But the person that was clearly and obviously the actual man of the match was Christian Eriksen, who I mentioned last minute in our last fantasy show as well. Everybody wanted to be Ali because of the goals, and I get that. In fantasy, that is what you want. But there is no question that Christian Eriksen was our best performer in the preseason. And I know, as we mentioned, that a lot of teams do not take the preseason seriously, and I have been hard on Eriksen in the past on work ethic, but he put in the work in the preseason, and even when people around him were not up to their best, he was. He was still playing like they were competitive matches, and I think it showed. From the off, he was controlling this match, and that has been one of my largest issues with Eriksen, is he doesn't take control of matches. He tends to play well when we're already playing well.
Yeah, he floats.
He does, but that was not the case today. And if that is the step that Eriksen takes this year, he will be in a similar situation to Coutinho next year.
Yeah, because that's exactly what happened with Coutinho last year. He went from being a player that when the team is playing well, he makes them play great. But he's not the guy who, when the team is playing poorly, helps them turn things around.
Turns it around. Right.
And Eriksen's been that guy for a couple of years now. And he had that at Ajax where he kind of stalled, wasn't able to take control of games. Went to you guys, and for about 6 months, the last 6 months of his first season there, he started largely from set pieces, but he started finding ways to win you games. Then he kind of settled into this rut of playing very, very well, but because of the quality around him, he was kind of happy for the other guys to do a lot of the dirty work, and then he'd just sprinkle his stardust on it. And I do wonder if he's just kind of had a look around and thought, I'm better than what people think I am. He might look at Phil Coutinho and think, I'm just as good as him.
And he has every right to.
And he does, because talent-wise, he's right in that conversation. I love Christian Eriksen. The two biggest gripes I have transfer-wise with the whole Rodgers era is that he wouldn't give the go-ahead on the Dele Alli deal because he wanted to sign Fabian Delph, and he was told he couldn't have both. He's a moron. And the other one was he signed Luis Alberto, who's currently playing for Lazio in the slowest midfield ever with Lucas Leiva, when he could have had Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
So we could have had both of those guys. To buy either of them now, you're looking probably 60 million for Eriksen and probably 80 to 100 million for Ali. And we could have had Ali for 5 million, and I think Eriksen was 11 million or something you guys paid for him in the end.
Yeah, those went well for us. Conversely, the one that was like that for us was Redknapp not even bothering to open negotiations with Suarez because he thought he played too similarly to Van der Vaart.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, no. We're like,
I'm guessing sure? He hadn't actually seen him play.
That is not a bad shout. Although he was part of one of my favorite moments ever, which was when we were originally linked with Gonzo from Brazil.
Mm.
There were rumors that we were close to signing him. You know how that telephone game works with transfer rumors?
Yeah.
Like one person says they've reached out to ask about, and then an hour later it's their deal's almost done. You're like, no. And it was one of my favorite moments. They asked him if they were close to signing Gonzo, and he just said, I don't know who that is. Just straight up. Who is that? I have no idea.
We've had that in the past as well. We were been linked with a guy, David Pizarro. I think he was a Chilean midfielder playing in Italy. And according to reports, we were right on the verge of signing him. And then they asked Hodgson.
Mm.
Roy, recent reports suggest you're about to sign Pizarro.
Oh, Claudio Pizarro is a great striker, but we've not shown any interest.
He didn't even know which Pizarro it was. Which goes to show you that most of what you hear in the press and all that is just utter rubbish designed to sell newspapers and fill column inches. Because this Davinson Sanchez deal or rumors broke. You guys have been talking to them for over a week.
And it broke because they commented on it.
Yeah. The same with the Cancelo stuff. That's come from Valencia. Because Daniel Levy works in the shadows because he's a shady MF.
It's true. And also, we put in early negotiations and bids for almost every player we're interested in. Like, that's how our transfer business is operated.
Exactly.
So it's very easy for people to get attached to one and then just run with it and start that cycle we were just talking about.
That's
like, it. They've offered for Ricardo Pereira. Close to signing. And you're like, no, that's literally how we do this every time.
Exactly. What you guys do is very simple. You identify, be it three or five targets for each position, and you make the exact same bid for all of them. And then you see how the responses are.
Who's the least offended?
Who's the least offended? And who's... Because obviously you're going to... Say, for example, you've got five right backs. You offer 15 million. You might get three hard no's. Not even interested. Someone comes back with 20. And someone comes back with 25. Well, now you know who you're going for. You're going for those two. The hard no's are the hard no's. They're the guys it's going to cost 30 and beyond to get.
Yeah.
With 20, you can work with 20. With 25, you might get it down to 20. You might get it for 22.5, and maybe you prefer that guy.
And it becomes add-ons or something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how Spurs work, and that's how Spurs have been successful. Like, the whole thing with Alderweireld, when it all kicked off with Southampton, was you guys had put in bids for Alderweireld and a number of other centre-backs, including one Victor, Virgil van Dijk.
Yep.
But you made a decision to take him. Alderweireld,
was Van Dijk at Celtic the same year Alderweireld was at Southampton?
Yes. Mm. So you bid for him from Celtic. But you got Alderweireld for less than what Celtic were asking you for Van Dijk. Which is 12 million. You could have actually had both that summer for 25. And it's funny because there was rumours that summer that Barcelona wanted Jan Vertonghen. So...
There were, yeah, because that first year he made Team of the Year.
He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. So there was rumours that you could have sold Vertonghen and bought Alderweireld and Van Dijk. And we're probably sitting here with Spurs as the league champions if that happened. So you put those two with Wanyama in front and Lloris behind. And everybody else is just chilling like, we'll score one and the lads will take care of it. Like, yeah.
We'd somehow be better than still the best defence in the Premier League.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. All right, well, we have gone on plenty long enough for the listeners, I am sure. But always a pleasure speaking with you, Dave. Tell the folks where they can find you.
Anfield Index. Generally, just talk about Liverpool. But I also talk about basketball. I've got a podcast called NBA Holds. And I've got an MMA podcast called MMA Monthly. So they're out this week. And my Liverpool podcast was out yesterday, I think. I just record them. Other people do the rest.
Fair enough. I am your host, Kevin DeVries, at KevRuff on Twitter. You can find my fantasy writings over at goal.com. We'll have a team of the week up probably by the time you're listening to this. Also, be sure to check out our championship show and our FPL show. The championship show also should be up around nowish by the time you're listening to this. And the fantasy show goes up on Wednesday mornings, UK. All right. Thanks again, Dave. Always a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Take care, Kev. Thanks a million.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.